Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, my friends, to Web Sleuth Radio on Blog Talk Radio. Let's get the legal goo out of the way, shall we? The opinions expressed on this show are those of the host and the guests and have nothing to do with WebSleuth.com LLC, which is a completely different corporate entity. In other words, Web Sleuth Radio and WebSleuth.com are different, so please don't whine on WebSleuth.com about something said on Web Sleuth Radio. My name is Tricia Griffith. I am the co-owner of WebSleuth.com, and I have complete control and reign over Web Sleuth Radio, which can always get me into all kinds of trouble. In fact, right now, I'm at a secret location. I can't tell you where I'm at, because if I do, then I might not appear as interesting and mysterious, because in real life, I'm milk toast when I really want to be caviar and champagne. And then again, I have no idea what the hell I'm talking about. I do know this much, though. Kimster is here, and Kimster is our wonderful executive producer. In addition to doing all of that hard work, Kimster is also in charge of making sure I don't have toilet paper on my shoe, a very big job indeed. Welcome, Kimster.
Thank you, Tricia.
Well, you know, sometimes you just got to be a little bit different, and that's, I think that's what's happening today, or maybe it's just because I haven't had any sleep, or I may have eaten some of those brownies that Chef Mom made in the green room tonight. I just don't know. Joining us a little bit later on will be Pat Brown. Pat has a new novel out. It's a novel, which is different for her, called Only the Truth. Pat is a criminal profiler. We'll be talking with Pat in a bit. And later on, Isabel Zender from TheExaminer.com. Isabel has written amazing articles about the Trayvon Martin George Zimmerman case, and we'll be talking to both of those ladies about that case. But first up, one of my dear friends, I love this man. He does so much for so many, and he never, ever even talks about it. Brad Dennis. Brad is the director of the Class Kids Search Center, and Brad has been involved with and basically putting together the search for Sierra Lamar in Morgan Hill, California. And Brad, welcome to Web Sleuth Radio.
Well, thank you, Tricia.
Good. Hey, listen, let's talk about Sierra Lamar. Sierra is a 15-year-old girl who literally vanished a few weeks ago. She said, bye, Mom, walked out the door. This is in Morgan Hill, California, Northern California. And her trail ended at the end of her driveway, if I'm not mistaken, which people think perhaps she got into a car, and she has literally vanished. Her cell phone and purse were found, and the police were able to tell that it was thrown from a fast-moving car. And I think that's all we know. Brad, give us any sort of update you might have on Sierra.
Well, I think you pretty much have nailed all of it. There's so much about this case that we just don't know. We don't know if there was any contact. We don't know if there was some kind of pre-planned meeting with someone. We don't know if it's a flat-out stranger abduction on a little quiet cul-de-sac. What we do know is that she's still missing. It's been several weeks now. We've been able to put out close to 2,000 searchers into the field and really haven't found any additional evidence or clues.
Now, one thing that I would like people to know about Morgan Hill, let me back up a minute. Class Kids, they go in a lot of places and do a lot of searching as an organization. And many times, because of the size of the community or perhaps the economic situation, it's difficult to get volunteers. That doesn't mean people don't care. It's just whatever the situation is. Well, in Morgan Hill, the response has been absolutely amazing. I've never seen anything like it. I went to the search center on, Saturday, and it was amazing. I mean, you have, 600 searchers show up on a regular basis, correct, Brad?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we average about 600 searchers. We're averaging right now close to 50, sometimes even 60 search assignments in the field. I mean, the community itself is just, I think they've just been galvanized by this little girl's story. And it's the one thing that we always talk about. You talk about it on your show and on Web Sleuth, and we talk about it publicly, that when a child goes missing, it doesn't just affect a family. It affects the entire community.
That's right. And I had the great pleasure of meeting Sierra's mom and dad, and incredible people, very, very strong, and all this community support has really helped them. You can tell that it's boosted their spirits, because it has to. And like you said, there is nothing, really there's nothing else. That's all we know about Sierra. And think about it. If you really sit and think about it, a child just vanishes. What would you do? I would be an absolute mess. But the community has come together like none I have ever seen. And if you're out in this area, the search center is in need of some refurbished computers. Again, that is the Sierra Lamar Search Center, formerly Burnett Elementary School. But and they're going to have another search tomorrow and then another one on Saturday and Sunday. Correct, Brad?
Correct. Wednesday and then again Saturday and Sunday. Volunteers can show up anytime between the hours of 8 and 1. They'll be able to put you out in the field. We kind of stop it around 1 because each of our search assignments are written for you to take about 3 hours in mm-hmm. the field, and then you have about an hour when you come back doing debriefing.
And literally there has just been nothing. I mean, there is the good thing is, and this is what I tell people when they get discouraged, the good thing is when you search a place and there's nothing there, that in itself is evidence that she wasn't there, and so you're helping. And I think people can probably get discouraged at times, don't you think, Brad?
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. These community members have been so tremendous. You know, I take a lot of beating in the search and rescue community because I'm in that community. And I take that beating for utilizing emergent volunteers or untrained community people. But I can tell you this, I will stick untrained community people that are passionate about finding a missing kid out there against anyone. Every single one of these search teams have come up with valuable evidence. Now, granted, after the fact, after law enforcement takes a look at it, that so-called evidence does not pan out. It's not what we're looking for. But it's all very valid items. It shows their tenacity and their determination to bring little Sierra home.
Exactly right. And I know when the searchers get out there in the field and they're looking and they see something, it's very rewarding because you think, well, maybe this is it. Maybe this is a key piece of evidence. And like I said, even if it isn't, that's okay because you've eliminated that area and that's what counts. A lot of people don't know that Class Kids has a complete search center or a complete search department, I should say. Brad, now you are working on something rather big right now in Florida, which is where you're based. Tell us about what you're working on.
Oh, my goodness, a lot of different things. We do have a complete search and rescue team with nationally certified ground search and rescue folks as well as nationally certified canines. We have 15 different canines on our unit right now, most of which are here in our local area, but we also have some affiliate teams that we work with. During this past search, we did something that we've never done before, which is remote mapping. We actually had many of our search managers actually doing all of the mapping from various locations around the country, which freed me and our other representatives there up to actually help manage the search versus having to sit there and map everything.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a tremendous thing. But we also deal with a lot of child trafficking. And we're very involved in human trafficking, or anti-human trafficking, I should say. And so we have an entire staff of trained volunteers that work one night a week doing nothing but scrubbing through advertisements, online advertisements of child trafficking victims, trying to corroborate as much information about those victims as we possibly can, and then forwarding that information on to the appropriate authorities.
We do have a question in the chat room, but before we go to that question, Brad, when you say looking for advertisement, you're talking about like kids who are advertising their bodies and you can tell they're children, or I don't know exactly what you mean.
These are traffickers that advertise these kids. They portray them as adults on websites such as Backpage.com.
Mm-hmm.
Backpage is an online bulletin board that has an escort section on it, and you can go in there to pretty much any city in the country and see the escorts in that local town. And unfortunately, it's where the same pimps and traffickers will advertise these kids.
And how can you tell they're kids?
Well, many times it's just through the photos themselves, but a lot of times it's through different indicators that they place in the ads that enable us to do that. Plus, there's different ways to track them from one city to another city.
So you have lots of ways. So they're not always fooling everybody when they put kids up there, and they think they look 18, but they don't. And it, in reality, they don't want him to look 18 because that's the draw. That's the sick, twisted draw. Kimster, we have a question. Are you available for that question, my dear? Or have
yes,
I got you
I'm
doing?
Yes, I'm right here.
Okay, what is the question for Brad?
Okay, the question is from in Michigan. It says, Tricia, can you ask Brad about the handcuff box? Does he think it's related? And then Florida mother wanted to know if the box and used condoms were together or just in the same area.
I think we did determine that, but go ahead, Brad. I'll let you answer that one.
They were together. They were very close by each other, not too far away from all the other items that were found. Whether or not they're related, I think it's just too early to tell. I know that they have sent off all the items for forensic testing, and we're just kind of waiting for the results.
I had heard they weren't, but then I, you know, who knows? Maybe that was just jumping the gun a bit. But again, like you said, you don't know until you have it tested. So I take it back. I guess they are having it tested, and it might be related. So
they are having it tested. The area had been searched previously, at least a couple of times. So was it missed? Don't really know. Was it placed afterwards? Again, it's one of those things that we just don't really know. Mm-hmm. But I think once they get the test back, it'll help them rule it in or out.
Can you talk about any of the things that you have found that are being tested?
We have found lots of different items out there. I mean, anytime you go out and do one of these searches, I mean, it's kind of like a state of our world. You know, you go into any section of mm-hmm. of a field or wood.
Oh, that's okay. Kimster, can you take that off, hon? Thank you. Okay, go ahead.
Hello?
Hold on one sec. Kimster, can you take that off the air? I think she did. Okay, Brad, go ahead.
And, you know, you just find all kinds of different items. We have found, a tremendous amount of clothes, underwear, more condoms
than you can imagine.
Just a lot of different items out there. And I can tell you this, that the Santa Clara Sheriff's Office has been tremendous to work with. They have been so proactive in responding to items that we have found out there in the field. They have collected numerous items. Again, where they all stand in the matrix of whether or not it actually fits Sierra's case, I don't know. What I can say is they have been very tremendous in going out and actually collecting a lot of these items.
Okay, we have somebody, Wise Old Owl, just posted in the chat room that SA, I don't know who SA, SA sent out a press release saying there'll be a major announcement in the case within 72 hours. Are you talking about Sierra Lamar, Wise Old Owl? Never mind. That's okay. I don't think that's Sierra Lamar. Sorry. I think she's talking about a different case. Okay. So Brad, what other cases, will you be working on that you can talk about? Are you going to be going out any place else in the near future or?
We still have a case that's very dear and near to a lot of our hearts. It probably hasn't hit a lot of the mainstream media. But it's the case of Shayna Peoples out of Geneva, Alabama.
Yes.
This is a 19-year-old special needs girl that just vanished again from her home, or actually from the street. She was walking down the street and just up and went missing.
Mm-hmm.
We've been working with her family a lot. Right now I don't have a lot to go on as far as running another search. We have ran a couple of searches, but we still are desperately following that for a break in that case. We've been contacted by a number of other families since Sierra went missing. That kind of happens. We have a tendency to kind of stay under the radar a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But when they see our name out there, then families will contact us, and we encourage families to please contact us. I mean, that's how we get involved. We either get involved from families asking us for our assistance or from law enforcement directly. And so if there's families out there that would like for us to kind of take a look at their case, we'd be happy to.
That would be wonderful. And that's the sad thing, Brad, is a lot of people don't realize that there are a lot of missing people out there, kids as well, that just don't get the attention that some of the other cases do. We're talking with Brad Dennis, the director of the Class Kids Search Center. My name is Tricia Griffith, and this is Web Sleuths Radio. Brad, if somebody wants to help you out or learn more about the search the search business, if you will. Do you take volunteers in Florida there to help you at the heartbeat of the operation?
We do, and we actually have a long list of training that we provide our volunteers. We have it set up where it kind of meets your needs. I mean, if you're really gung-ho and can go through all of the training, we can get you all the way up to what we call our Tier 1 responders. Those are the ones that travel with me, and that means that you become nationally certified. But we also have those that can just, like, volunteer, take flyers out, do a lot of that kind of stuff whenever we have missing kids locally. Mm-hmm. Or even in their own local area, and we put you through some training for that as well.
Well, Brad, a lot of the people in the chat room are talking about what a hero you are, and I know you would never admit it or say it, and I know you're a very shy man who does this work for the love of it and for the love of people and children, and you certainly don't do it for any other reason, and I am very honored to call you my friend. So, Brad, thank you for everything that you do. ClassKids.org is the website. And Sierra Lamar, the search will be tomorrow and Saturday and Sunday in Morgan Hill. You can go to ClassKids.org and there's more there. Brad, thank you so very, very much for all you do.
Well, thank you. Thank you to all your listeners and everyone at Web Sleuths, because you guys have always been my heroes.
Oh, thank you. You're a sweetheart. Okay, my dear, you go take care.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye. Brad Dennis from Class Kids, an amazing man, and we adore him, just love and adore him, and he is very grateful to Web Sleuths as well. Okay, we're going to switch gears now from Sierra Lamar to Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman. I always include the two names together because we don't know exactly what is going on in this case. So it's not just the Trayvon Martin case, it's the George Zimmerman case and vice versa. On the phone with me right now, I have two incredible people. We have Isabel Zender from TheExaminer.com, and Isabel has written some amazing articles about Trayvon Martin and the case and George Zimmerman. In fact, there's one up today at Examiner.com that she has written. And Pat Brown is with us. Pat is a criminal profiler who has been following the case quite closely. And Pat has a new book out. It's a bit different for Pat. It's a novel called Only the Truth. And we'll be talking about that in just a moment. But ladies, welcome to Web Sleuths Radio.
Thank you,
Tricia. Hi, Israel.
Hi, Pat.
Okay, let's go to Isabel Zender first. Isabel, you wrote today an article, and what do you think about the big announcement today? Was George has been ignoring his lawyers and basically blew them off. So the lawyers came on and said, you know what, George, we're dropping you as a client. And it just seems like there is this swirling going around George Zimmerman, like it's a big, huge cluster, as we call it. Isabel, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, they're saying that I listened to the press conference, and one of the big reasons from what I could gather, they're saying that they have withdrawn as his attorney is because they've not been able to contact him for the past couple days. Having worked with lawyers, it's not unusual that you don't hear from your client for a couple days, and I realize this is a much different type of a case, but I thought that was a bit odd that they would withdraw just for that reason. I think there's probably more.
There's a little more. They talked about the fact that his website, they had gone to all this trouble to put up a website, and they got George's dad to hook up the PayPal account to his account, and then boom, all of a sudden the real George Zimmerman website comes up. And we have the controversy of the picture that said, you know, I can't even remember what it said. It was graffiti, but it was written on the African-American Studies Hall at this particular college. And then George Zimmerman, you know, thanked them. And it's like, what he needs to do is just shut the hell up and hide because he's not doing himself any favors by opening his big fat mouth. Not at all. And on that incredibly professional note, sorry about that, Isabel. I know you can't say that, but I can. Pat Brown, Isabel, we'll come back to you in just a little bit.
Sure.
Pat Brown, what do you think of the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman case?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say you started off very well.
Oh, thank you.
with that, you know, let's realize that there's two people here. We haven't come to a conclusion exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And when I wrote an article, Women in Crime Inc., on that exact thing, and I said, let's go through the different things, but let's keep in mind that we have not yet gotten all the details in. Having said that, certainly George Zimmerman's behavior is concerning.
It is.
His behavior that night was very concerning because he was the original aggressor. We don't know if there was another. We don't know if Trayvon was even an aggressor. That's only what George says. But certainly we do know that George Zimmerman was an aggressor that followed somebody who was not committing a criminal act, and he followed him with a weapon, which one of the rules to owning a weapon is, yes, the carry. You know, if you have a right to carry, a legal right to carry, it's there for your defense. But because you have that right, you also have the responsibility not to, you know, incite any kind of a fight where then you end up bringing a gun to a fist fight. So he had concerning behavior right from the start because of his aggressive nature. I personally see him as a wannabe cop who didn't get in the police department. I think he's 28 and he hadn't gotten in the police department. I don't know why. Perhaps he didn't pass the psych test. Perhaps there were other reasons he didn't have a background. I don't know. But he didn't make it. And he apparently really wants to go out there and play cop, and he's not in a uniform. He's not the cop, and Trayvon Martin would have no idea who this guy was following him. So certainly we don't know exactly from that point on what happened. But we do know that George Zimmerman has some unusual behaviors there, which are concerning. Whether they're racist or not racist, it's just he has a very kind of aggressive behaviors. And now with this whole thing with the lawyers, a lot of people are mumbling around there saying, you know, I think what he's got is Jose Baez in the background. You know, he realized he's got some local guys, and personally, I don't think it's that much good. They kept opening their mouths. I kept blowing my eyes saying, shut up. You know, you're doing George a service here. So I think he's got a bigger dude, you know, around the corner going to be his defense attorney should he be charged. And meanwhile, yeah, I think he's trying to, the way he's thanking people for things maybe he shouldn't be thanking them for, I think he's trying to build up the bank account because, you know, there's a lot of people out there that send that guy money. If he goes to trial, he's going to have some extra cash. And if he doesn't go to trial, he's going to have some extra cash.
Oh, wow.
A big house out of it, you know. So I'm a little concerned about his behaviors, but, of course, it does not prove at this point that, you know, exactly what occurred. And hopefully, now that the grand jury thing is off the table, we have a prosecutor who is properly examining the evidence and, you know, determining whether there is probable cause or not.
Isabel, thank you, Pat. Isabel, as far as this goes, it's in the beginning, it was George Zimmerman was the bad guy. Sorry. You guys aren't married. George Zimmerman was the bad guy. There was no question. You know, Trayvon was totally innocent, and then the story starts to evolve a little bit, that, you know, well, maybe Trayvon wasn't as innocent as we thought, and maybe George Zimmerman is, you know, has some odd quirks. Where are we now as far as that you know, kind of weighing the evidence, if you will? Is it still in Trayvon's favor, or is it going more towards George Zimmerman? What do you think? Having been someone who has been close and followed the case very closely.
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, I would say just having watched a march in New York that just took place a little bit ago, they're all screaming Trayvon. You know, it seems to me, I mean, I'm, you know, personally not saying for me, but it seems to me that as far as the general public, there's more of a weight on Trayvon's side. I don't know. You know, that's just what I'm observing. But I, you know, did see, and I've seen a lot of interviews and reported on some of them with Anderson Cooper and Piers Morgan, and there's just a lot going on, and a lot of the attorneys coming out speaking. And basically, pretty much what everybody is saying is what Pat was just saying is we have to wait for all the evidence. It's just, it's too early, it's too soon without having all of that. Shifting gears just a little bit, I found it interesting today during the press conference, the attorneys made a comment that they didn't want their hands on the money from this new website, which I found a little bit bizarre.
I thought that terminology, we don't want, I don't want my hands on the money. It almost sounded criminal.
Yeah,
you know?
It sounded really odd. I feel like there's some, I mean, I just personally feel like there's something deeper going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is, one of the other comments, I did do an article this afternoon, and I did it as I was listening to the press conference, so it's just really pretty much straight through most of the press conference. But he also, one of the attorneys made a comment that, and it was, quote, he's not in complete control of what's going on. And that
mm-hmm.
was a little bit strange to me. Like, what do they mean by that? I mean, has somebody gotten a hold of him, or is it because he's mentally unstable? They said he's lost some weight. He's probably got post-traumatic stress disorder. He can't go get, they made a comment, he can't go to 7-Eleven, which I thought was a little odd, you know,
mm-hmm.
given the whole Trayvon thing, but he can't go there to get a Coke. He can't get out of his house. They said he's pretty much alone. They won't say that he's been completely alone, but mostly alone. So, and they said to, if anybody wants to look for him, not to look for him in Florida. He's far from Florida, but yet they feel he's still in the country.
Well, would it surprise either of you? And Pat, I'll start with you first. We're talking with Pat
mm-hmm.
Brown, criminal profiler, and Isabel Zender, reporter for TheExaminer.com, about Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman. Pat, would it surprise you if, I don't know, kind of unscrupulous people, if you will, have gotten their hooks into George Zimmerman and are giving him bad advice? I just envision these kind of slimy people coming in, and, you know, George has no idea what to do. Let's face it, he's not the brightest bulb in the closet here, and he's already made some bad decisions, but I think he's probably making more bad decisions, and there are people, I'm guessing, that are probably surrounding him and saying, you know, show me the money. That's just kind of a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I have nothing to base it on. What are your thoughts, Pat?
I think Zimmerman already knows how to make all his own bad decisions.
That's true.
I mean, he's made a ton of them. He did that when the police dispatcher said, do not follow Trayvon because he's not committing a crime. Leave it to us. We'll get him out. And he went right ahead and did what he wanted because I think he wanted to be the neighborhood hero and, you know, be the bad guy, his version of the bad guy, even though he hadn't proven to be a bad guy at that moment in time. So I think that George Zimmerman has a lot of, you know, I don't know if there's a personality disorder working, but I wouldn't be surprised. So I think he's made his bad decisions, and now he's made his bed, he's going to lie in this, because unless he can prove that he walked away from Trayvon, had a good distance, and then Trayvon ran up behind him and, you know, started beating him, unless he can prove that, I think he's in trouble. I think one of the bigger problems that we're suffering from is there are rational people discussing this case, and they're discussing, you know, the racial issues that are stated to be involved or possibly be involved, whether George Zimmerman was a racist or whether this is an example of bigger racism problems we have in our country. We have rational people trying to discuss this, but unfortunately, on both sides, you know, of what should be not a racial divide. In other words, it shouldn't be blacks on one side.
Right.
Thank you for calling the Pat Brown Criminal Profiling Agency.
Uh-oh.
I'll get the message. I'll get back as soon as I can. Thank you.
Uh-oh. Pat, how do we get rid of that?
At the tone, please record your message. When you finish recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Okay, Pat, hold on just a minute. Pat, where are you? Are you there, Pat? Pat, are you there?
I don't hear her. Mm-mm.
I don't either. I wanted to hang up before, you know, there was some, like, personal message on there that everybody in the world heard.
Maybe she'll call back in.
Yeah.
You know something else, Tricia?
What's that?
The attorney said something about, they were describing the scene and how he was, Trayvon was slithering behind buildings, you know, and then one of the media there made a comment. If you look at the pictures of the complex and where he was behind, it's kind of like you would visualize two sets of buildings, you know, two
mm-hmm.
condo buildings facing each other, let's say, the two backyards facing each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then so each of those backyards, they have a little bit of a grassy area. And then in the middle, there's a walkway.
Yeah.
So this is the area where all this went down. So one of the media people were asking, well, then, you know, Zimmerman was saying he was in his truck, and if Trayvon was slithering behind buildings, how would he have seen him from his truck? Which, that was a good point.
Mm-hmm.
Because the road is on the other side. So you're talking, this is the pathway where they were was between two buildings.
Right.
And I'm sure there are some openings and so forth.
Well,
you know,
that
between.
Is a very good point. Yeah, that is
but
a very
good point.
But I had
thought about
point.
That. I went and I did some aerial, you know, shots online and everything was looking at it. And it is interesting when you look at the exact location of where this took place. You know, but, I mean, all of this is what police have to figure out. I mean, they've got, they're the ones that have all of this information, the information about the shot, pictures,
mm-hmm.
you know, whatever. And I'm, you know, hoping and praying they'll be able to put it all together. I would think they should be able to put all the pieces together.
Let's hope so. Let's. We do have evidence. A couple of questions from the chat room. And, Isabel, I was going to ask you this as
mm-hmm.
well, because it was such an, I just thought it was very strange. This whole press conference was weird.
Yes, it was.
2 points. Don't you think that they should have just come out and said, hey, he's no longer our client?
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Yep. Yeah, I think they said
way too much. What about the shaken baby syndrome that the two lawyers mentioned today? We're talking with Isabel Zender from TheExaminer.com about Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman. They went on to say about the shaken baby syndrome, and somehow that's kind of like the same thing here. I wasn't quite sure.
Hmm,
did you get that?
No.
Oh,
no,
yeah, he
not.
Talked about about how George... he says it's like the shaken baby syndrome. You know, his head is going back and forth and back and forth.
Mm.
And he was saying that's why he felt his life was in danger, because his head was going up and down, back and forth, just like shaken baby syndrome. So,
well, one of the questions has been, and I know there's been all this issue about the video and enhancement of the video and all of that, and that it's the police video of George Zimmerman 30 minutes after the event.
Right.
And the shooting. And so what they were, you know, when you look at the video, it is a little bit grainy, but the way that it was described, that George Zimmerman's head was bashed into the cement over and over repeatedly, you would expect to see a lot more than what you could see on that video. Of course,
mm-hmm.
from my understanding was he'd been cleaned up, but this was 30 minutes after the event. You don't see a bunch of swelling. You know, he supposedly had a broken nose. That's what a lot of people were up in arms about, that because that was not visible to them. But then the other side will say, well, if you zoom it in and enhance the video, you can see possibly this red mark on the back of his head and so on. And on all of that, my theory on all that is that the police will have far better pictures and so on, and they can use all of that to piece this together. This is just information we just don't have.
Right. And that's just that we are just getting information that's just bits and pieces. And it's
bits
just
bits and pieces.
And for us to judge like this, and
mm-hmm.
you know, everybody, I'm going to say what everybody is thinking, and that is, if he is found not guilty, and I do think there'll be charges, but if he is found not guilty, everyone's going to be afraid of the rioting that will happen, and it will happen.
Oh, yes, they will. Mm-hmm.
And that's what everybody is worried about. And you know, again, it is a huge racial divide because,
yes.
And I've said this before, I grew up in Utah. I'm not going to comment on, you know, what it's like to be African-American. That would be awful and rude and arrogant of me. I would never do that. But, you know, it's as I sit back and I see these extreme groups on both sides, mind you,
yes,
they're
they
both
are.
There.
We've yeah.
got the neo-Nazi, you know, skinhead types, and then the type, this very scary types, and the types on the others that want to, you know, seem like they want to start a war.
Mm-hmm.
And if we could just get those two sides to stop stirring it up, you know,
yeah.
so normal people, like the majority of Americans on both sides of this issue, can sit down and discuss it and figure it out and hopefully make some changes so it doesn't happen again. Because when you get right down to it, in my opinion, George Zimmerman was the adult. He had a gun and he wasn't a cop. And like Pat said, you don't bring a gun to a fist fight. And that right there is what really bothers me. Why did he have a gun? And why was he doing this, you know?
And the fact that he didn't stop when they said, we don't need you to do that. I mean, that's very clear to any of us hearing it, that they're telling you, don't follow him.
Mm-hmm.
So to continue following him, which he did, because you can hear it.
Okay, are we sure? We're absolutely sure he did. Because I've had people say, he didn't continue, and da-da-da. And yeah. Are we sure? Are we sure that he did continue to follow him?
that was my impression. Now, till we have everything, you know, we're going by everything that we're hearing and that's been reported, but that was my understanding. And when you're listening to the video, I mean, excuse me, to the 911 call, it sounds like he's still going.
That's what I think, right.
Mm-hmm. It sounds that way. So, yeah, we don't know for sure.
Well, they said, they didn't say don't follow him.
No, they said, what did I just say? I just said it.
Yeah, it was.
We don't need you to
We don't need you to do
him.
That.
We don't need you to do that. Yeah,
right,
we don't need
exactly.
You
to do
that. Trayvon, here's the big thing. Trayvon was not committing a criminal act.
Exactly, exactly.
He was not climbing in somebody's window that wasn't his. He wasn't breaking into a car. He wasn't raping somebody on the street. Now, if I go around my neighborhood, there are lots of shifty-looking kids. There are black shifty-looking kids. There are white shifty-looking kids. There are Hispanic shifty-looking kids.
Yep.
No, I see lots of shifty kids. That's just because some of them dress like thugs because they think it's cool,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and they also have that look, you know what I mean, that look, instead of being that real friendly, happy look, they got that surly kind of, hey, I'm cool, and who are you look? I mean, that's just the way some teenagers are. Now, when I walk down my street or I look out, you know, as kids go by, I cannot chase every child around the town because he's walking down my street.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't do that. Now, if he's starting to climb over my fence, I've got another issue. You know,
right.
What are you doing climbing over my fence? Why are you going, you know, doing something wrong if I see you attacking somebody? Yes, I have a citizen's right to try to, you know, if I see a crime in progress and somebody's, but here again, even if it's a crime in progress, it's a property crime, I don't have the right to run over and become a police officer. If I see him, if I see a person, a male or female, attacking another person, and I'm trying to save that person's life, that gives me the right to interfere. But that has to be that you know, somebody's life is in severe danger. I believe the person's about to be killed. That's the rule for trying to doing anything. And
mm-hmm.
there was nothing like that with George Zimmerman. He did not say Trayvon was committing a crime, or even, you know, he did not say. They just said, he's a kid, I don't like the way he looks. Well, so he's a kid on the street, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's your excuse for going after him? You can't do that. So that's why he's put himself in a bad situation. And
right. And they're trying to...
I think if they needs to be some charges there somewhere.
Yeah,
well,
they're trying to say it was because there was all those break-ins in the neighborhood, and he was, you know, on high alert type thing.
Break-ins in everybody's neighborhood.
But I was just going to say that.
There's a drug. We have a pretty nice neighborhood where I live near the University of Maryland, and but you know, I do know that I've been told by an ex-cop that I know works with gangs that we have gang activity now in my town, which we haven't had before. We have had some break-ins to cars. We've had a couple break-ins to homes, especially on one of the streets that, you know, that's the main drag. We have it too. And it's
mm-hmm.
in a pretty quiet town, but it's here too. What am I going to do? Am I going to go around and say, you know,
mm-hmm.
every kid who walks down the block, I'm going to go after? I can't do that. Now, if I want to be part of neighborhood watch, that's one thing. I keep my eye out and see, you know, work for criminal activity and notify the police. But I can't pick up my 9mm and start chasing kids around the block. You know,
when we were part of a neighborhood watch, we were definitely told that you don't try to pursue anybody. You just, if you see anything, then you contact police immediately, and that's it.
Right.
It wasn't
our
responsibility to go after.
Only time that it's ever permissible that you ever interfere is when somebody is being attacked.
Yes.
Because it's saving somebody's life, and then you have a duty. But, you know, just, you know, for any other reason, no.
And, Pat, can I ask you something? I've always wondered why. I mean, there was some screaming that went on for some time. I mean, I heard it. Why didn't anybody come to his aid?
The problem is screams. When people hear screams, it takes them a while to register what they're actually hearing. I think it's a very odd thing. You kind of go, what is that? What in the world? What in the world? And by that time, it's too late. What I think is interesting about the screams is that, you know, theoretically, if George Zimmerman is being attacked, is bashed,
mm-hmm.
or punched,
mm-hmm.
and all this stuff, I don't think he's going to be screaming. Because one of the tendencies, when you're being attacked and your big nose is being punched and your head is being hit into the ground, you don't have the air to be screaming like that. If somebody pulls a gun on you and you think they're about to shoot you, you'd be screaming like,
screaming like a girl.
Which is the only way I can describe it, screaming like a girl, because you're terrified. The other interesting thing is George Zimmerman, you know, claims that Trayvon is over him beating him, and he pulls out his gun and shoots him. I don't know why Trey Zimmerman Trayvon wasn't lying on top of him, because after you shoot him straight, you know, he's above you, and you shoot him, he should drop right on your body.
Well,
so that's another thing that's kind of weird.
Here's the thing. I want to jump in and say this. There are eyewitnesses who say they saw George Zimmerman on the bottom yelling for help. Now,
Just the one.
One, and there's somebody who says the opposite.
And the other, yes, the other people say the opposite. There was one that said that he was on bottom.
And then what? Okay, so let's say he's on bottom, and Trayvon's on top.
This could have been after flipping around. I mean, we don't know what was going on.
Right.
You know?
Right. And then so George takes his gun out and shoots him, and then Trayvon just stops, and George rolls out, and that's why he's face down in the grass. That's what they're going to say.
In theory. The problem is there's George has no blood on him in any way, shape, or form that we can see on his clothing, on his hand.
Right.
Whereas, you know, it's very hard to have a broken nose, which usually bleeds profusely, a bashed in head. Because you normally, when your nose hurts, your head is bashed, don't you usually just immediately, doesn't your hand fly to that location right there? Happens is you immediately get blood on your hands. Even if it's not flowing down your shirt, you know you're touching the bloody areas, and that transfers to your pants and your shirt, and especially when you're freaked out. We don't see a lot of that. And of course, I say this is why we have to know what the evidence is. And my concern is that this is the way a lot of people view it. They don't see the evidence that Trayvon attacked George Zimmerman. They don't see George Zimmerman with a lot of injuries. They don't see George Zimmerman all freaked out when he comes to the police station. So if the police, if there's no charges, so there's never an opportunity to air this case where the lawyers can bring forth the evidence and see something. A lot of police cases when they don't go forward, everything's just shoved under the carpet.
And that would just be worse for. And again,
and that's
going
to be really bad.
We shouldn't. In theory, we should not let public opinion determine whether we bring charges or not, in theory. But if no charges are brought in this case, we know what's going to happen. And it's very, very scary. We're talking with Pat Brown, criminal profiler, and Isabel Zender from TheExaminer.com about Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman. Go ahead, Isabel. What were you going to say?
The other thing I wanted to say is I had, in one of the articles that I'd written on the neighbor 911 calls, I went through and transcribed all of the calls. And one of them, the woman says, "Oh, my God, the guy on top has a white T-shirt." Now, Trayvon was wearing a gray hoodie, and I noticed in the video at the police station that Zimmerman had on a light-colored T-shirt underneath his red jacket.
Mm-hmm.
So I wondered if he possibly had removed his jacket. I mean, it just struck me that somebody was saying, and I know it was dark, it was difficult to see, but she described it at that moment, in the heat of the moment, as the guy on top having a white T-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
So that has really stuck with me, because she said it twice. She said, "I don't know, I just looked out my window and the guy on top has a white T-shirt."
And we don't know what color Trayvon's T-shirt was under his hoodie, but he was wearing his hoodie when he was shot. Do we know that for sure?
That was my understanding. I mean, though all we've heard about is hoodies.
We don't have the totality of the evidence, and that's a word
exactly.
I use a lot. Totality of the evidence.
Exactly.
Because when I do a lot of when I do profiling and work with the police department and actually analyze the crime scene, you can get like three or four pieces of information. Go ooh, and then you get the information. Go okay now.
Yeah.
Throws everything out of
that's
the window.
The one that just did it. You know, so I could be thinking, you know, George Zimmerman doesn't look good in this whole situation. He doesn't look good. He doesn't look good. He doesn't look good. And then I could find out one thing and go, on the other hand.
Yeah.
That's right. And we don't know that Trayvon didn't tear his sweater off when he thought he was, you know, who knows?
We don't know yet. And that's why it would be nice if somehow this was handled properly. So whether there's charges or not, I think I would like to see more of the information, the evidence be available. You know,
right.
so we know what happened rather than, and this is what often happens, it just
guessing.
Goes quiet and it's just nothing comes of it and then everybody goes berserk because they don't know. They have no idea what's going on. And, you know, it maybe, if, you know, this wasn't such a a big, you know, racial issue all of a sudden, which I don't think it should be. I think one of the big problems we have with the idea of profiling, especially racial profiling, is a lot of what I tell people is people profile 24/7. Every single person does it. Trayvon does it too, because he had to look at George Zimmerman and he profiled him. George profiled Trayvon. You know, profile the person at 7-Eleven. Was there? No, everybody profiles everybody. Are they dangerous? Are they nice? Are they stupid? Are they smart? You know, are they rich? Are they poor? You know, what? How are they going to respond to me? If it's a girl on the corner, he profiles her and say she looks like she might go with me, or she looks like a tough girl is going to say no. I mean, we profile constantly, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's human beings are made to profile. The thing that we cannot do is take to cross the legal line and to take an illegal action against somebody based on our theories.
Let me jump in here just a moment, if I could, please. My name is Tricia Griffith. You're listening to Web Sleuths Radio. We're talking with Isabel Zender from Examiner.com and criminal profiler Pat Brown about Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman. We have a question from the chat room to Pat, but Isabel, since you transcribed the 911 calls, maybe you could jump in as well. The question is, did you listen to the 911 call where the boy was saying the guy on the bottom in red was screaming for help? Now, the guy on the bottom in red, isn't that George Zimmerman? And didn't they say?
The hoodie was supposed to be gray.
Right. So, the 911 call, I guess there was a boy that called in, I don't know how old he was, saying that the guy on the bottom in red was screaming for help. Does anybody remember that part of the 911?
That is not on these.
Yeah, I got myself from getting confused between who said what and what was legitimate and what was somebody's rumor, and
with
the phone calls, I'm like, I don't know.
Let's see. Say that again, Trish.
Okay, the boy called, supposedly he was 13, and he was saying the guy on the bottom in red was screaming for help.
Okay.
That's what he said.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it in this one. I transcribed, I think it was like 6 or 7 calls, and there may have been another one that I didn't have, but I do remember hearing what you're saying.
Okay, so that is part of
something to
it.
That effect. I remember something, and I can't put my finger on it exactly at the moment,
so
but I
we
do
have,
remember something to that.
There we have a witness saying, basically, because George was in red, if I remember correctly, basically saying it was George on the bottom and Trayvon was on the top. You know,
and I think that's the one that they're right. And I think that's the one that people are coming out questioning, who is this person? Because I think if this is the same person, or maybe it's not. You're saying it's a 13-year-old boy?
Supposedly it was a 13-year-old boy walking his dog, according to what I am reading now in the chat room, and I don't know. This is the first I remember hearing of it.
Because there was the sister of the boy was on here.
Yeah, she did call too. She called. Sister called.
Yeah, that's the one. And I think he got on the phone for a couple minutes. Let's see.
I think that's it.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it right here, but yeah, she. Let me hold on back here. Okay, wait.
One of the things they need to do is a crime reconstruction to make sure they know. We don't know where everybody was, what the layout of the land was. Crime reconstruction would then and verify the witnesses and each one said, and whether there's a veracity to what they're saying, or to be believed. I mean, there's so much to be put together: the physical evidence, the behavioral evidence, the area, the evidence of the area, the people, the witnesses, direct, indirect. I mean, there's a ton of evidence, and it all needs to be carefully, put the puzzle pieces together, and then we would hopefully, and we may still never, because there's a lot of quirky things that can happen. I mean, George Zimmerman could have slammed his head into the cement after it happened. He could have screamed.
He could.
Did you find it?
Or Trayvon could have run up on the back of him. We don't know which way it went. We don't know.
Isabel, did you find it?
Here's what I found. It's her call, and he jumps on the phone. And he says, I saw a man laying on the ground, and he was held down screaming, and I was going to go over there and try to help him, but my dog ran off the leash. So So I went and I got my dog, and then I heard a loud sound, and then the screaming stopped, which everybody kept saying that. And then the dispatcher says, did you see the person get shot? And the brother says, no. Do you know the person who was shot? No. The screaming stopped after the noise, he says. And that's it. That's all that the boy in
this particular call. So he didn't say anything about a guy in red?
Not in this call, no. Mm. This is the one where the girl calls in and says, my mm-hmm. brother was walking the dog and he saw it. So that may be getting mixed up with another one, but that's what, from the call that I transcribed, this
mm-hmm.
is all that he said.
Yeah, okay. So we don't know that. We don't know where that's coming from. It's not coming from that particular
right.
call anyway.
Not
so
that's
call.
So confusing that we need to, you know, that needs to all be, you know, really carefully analyzed, because it just turns into a nasty tangled web and we can't, you know, we
mm-hmm.
can't see all the pieces of it. So
right.
we are really all guessworking whether... You know,
yes.
who did what, whether Zimmerman was in the wrong or he wasn't in the wrong. And,
let's talk about one piece of evidence that is there
mm-hmm.
and that
mm-hmm.
everybody is going to have an opinion on,
mm-hmm.
and it's just not clear. And that is where George Zimmerman, I apologize in advance, but I just want to say it so we know what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm going to swear here.
Oh,
so
I know
kids
what you're
listening. He supposedly called Trayvon, quote, a fucking coon, unquote. Or
no,
coon.
He didn't. No, that's
okay. It was under his breath.
What happened? What was
people
that?
Claim he said that. What happens is you hear him, he's going, all of a sudden he makes his move, and you hear him mutter something. You can definitely say, fucking is definitely there. I'll go with you there. I'm going to say it to you. It was definitely there. But the
yeah.
second word was a little unclear. Now, I could not tell what he was muttering for some other reason, had nothing to do with it. Now, in the beginning, I gave him the benefit of the doubt. I said, I'm listening to this, and it almost sounds like a long O, like cones rather than coons. And I thought, is it possible he got out of the, you know, was walking and he tripped over one of those, like, traffic cones, and you know, and muttered that. It had nothing to do with Trayvon or that. Apparently, so I let that out there. I said, you know, I'm going to give that a possibility. We need to
but
know if it's something like that. However, supposedly, he came forward and said, didn't say what people thought he said, but he said punks.
Punks, and some
so,
people
okay,
saying that he said
cold.
Okay,
we can get rid of the cones issue now, so the cones issue isn't it. So he was actually talking about, you know, going after Trayvon saying, at least punks. But
mm-hmm.
that doesn't sound right to me. I mean,
and
it doesn't really match the sound of the word, so
no,
I'm
it
not
doesn't.
Really buying that one either.
No, and then the thing with me when I was listening to it, and I heard the enhanced version where they took out all the background sounds, and
right.
It's not that he only says it once, if I remember correctly. It's like a few times.
I only heard it once.
Did you only hear it once?
Really, here's what's really important to me. Nobody mm-hmm. comes up with a saying like that once
mm-hmm.
in their lifetime. I
mm-hmm.
mean,
no.
There are words that we would say. There's words we would say, and there's words we wouldn't say. I had somebody
mm-hmm.
accuse me once of saying something, and my mouth just dropped open, because I could get anybody who's ever known me and saying, look, 56 years, that woman would never, ever, ever use that terminology. No,
exactly.
Never in my life. And there's other terminologies which they go, yeah, I should say that. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, in my opinion, what's his history? What is George Zimmerman's history?
That's what we're not getting.
Has he said racial slurs before, or has he never said racial slurs before?
Mm-hmm.
So if he said this, if he said what people think he said, he has said something of a racial
mm-hmm.
slur before.
Right.
Even though
well,
people say he's got a mixed family, he's got blacks in his family and Hispanics in his family and whites in his family, they say he's a mixed family, got mixed relatives, and it would seem odd that he'd use racial slurs if he's got a, you know, a mixed race family. I have a mixed race family. I can't imagine any of my kids. You know, I have two biracial kids and one black son. I can't imagine anybody in my family saying a racial slur against anyone. That just
mm-hmm.
doesn't come out of our mouths. So I would think that would be true, but is it? They have to look at his history and find out whether this is his past behavior would show what he probably said that night.
I
don't think any of his friends are, I mean, a couple people came forward, but like the attorney said today, you know, his friends are scared to come forward. So people that have known him in the past, I don't see them really coming, not out publicly, you know what I mean,
mm-hmm.
possibly to the police. And it would be good if people would go to the police and tell them what they know, if they know these things.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just
one way,
you know,
or the other, you know.
Cold sounds closer to me than punks, but to me it sounds like
it sounded
the other
like
person.
Oon. Remember it when does. We played it like that time?
Yeah.
So
exactly, and it's just, you know, and I know a lot of people are saying, well, that's an old one, nobody would use it. Well, we don't know. That's just it. We don't. And that's the whole frustrating thing is we don't know.
We don't know.
And I have exactly. never seen a case divide people like mm-hmm. this one has on Web Sleuths. I mean, it's getting really
oh,
bad. And it all has to do with the mm-hmm. pot stirrers on both sides, you know.
Right.
And I'm sorry, I can't stand Al Sharpton. I think that guy, I don't know why MSNBC gave him a show, because he... After what he did in the Tawana Brawley case, I can't ever listen to him, you know. And then on the flip side, of course, we have Rush Limbaugh. I mean, both, you can always go back and forth and back and forth, in my opinion, back and forth and back and forth. But what we need to do is just discuss this calmly. Now, here's a good example, okay? I have somebody that I trust saying a kid called in and said there was a guy with a red shirt on the bottom screaming for help.
That may
the
be
transcript,
true.
The one that Isabel transcribed says it's not there. We need to find out if that's what was said. That's really important, because if that person is reliable and that person doesn't have a dog in this hunt, then that's something that's very, very reliable.
Correct.
We need to separate the lies, because already people have been lying, and we just need to just separate all of that. George Zimmerman needs to keep his mouth shut and not ask for money, and get those people out of his life that are giving him that poor advice. And Trayvon's family needs to be honest about who Trayvon really was. You know, it's the whole, I get so flustered just talking about it. I can't even put it into words. So I don't know. So talk to me, Isabel Zender from examiner.com. What are your thoughts? Where do we go from here?
I think we do the sensible thing and we wait for Angela Corey to finish her investigation
mm-hmm.
and see what she comes up with. I don't think that, you know, we can do this from here to then. And I mean, I think conversation is good if conversation stays peaceful and people can talk. I've seen some good conversation and some, possibly good things coming from this. But I've also seen a lot of negative come from this, as I'm sure, you know, you obviously have too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's, you know, and for me, I've been following this case, and there's so many different things that for, you know, this moment, I can't come to that one thing that you're asking me with the red jacket. I believe there was something. I just can't remember if it was a kid that said it or if it was an adult. I do know that somebody made reference to him being on the ground with a red jacket, that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
On the bottom. I did not think it was the 13-year-old child, but I could be wrong on that.
Okay.
So I'd have to go back and, you know, and I can't do all that this quickly.
Well,
but,
no. Of course you can't. No. I'm just saying that's very important. That's really
course,
a big,
right.
And that should be brought out. If that is true, if that really, and that person is reliable, we should be talking about that. Same with the other side. If there's other very strong pieces of evidence that goes in Trayvon's favor, we should be talking about that, not what
right.
we think and what we think we know. And
the other problem is we don't know what's reliable unless if it was like on a 911 call as the moment it's happening. Those calls in the moment when you're hearing people screaming in the background, you don't think anybody's, you know, I don't foresee any of those people would have said anything, lying about anything at that moment, if you know
exactly.
what I mean.
Exactly.
I believe that this was kind of an after the fact.
Excited
you know,
utterance.
I want to bring
Go
up
ahead,
something
Pat.
Else that we don't know. We mm-hmm. don't know if Trayvon was standing his ground. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's,
yeah, that's,
it's entirely possible
that's a good
that
point.
George Zimmerman mm-hmm. pulled the gun on him. He
right.
freaked, punched
right.
George Zimmerman. And they ended up rolling around on the ground. Trayvon could have even ended up on top of George Zimmerman, but it doesn't necessarily mean Trayvon was the aggressor. He could have been defending
right.
himself at that moment. And on the other hand, it could be Zimmerman who was defending himself.
Right.
You know, so we actually, all of that information isn't in. Only thing I can say is that Zimmerman was the adult who essentially stalked
mm-hmm.
a child on the street who was not committing a crime. And that, I think, is the biggest reason he has to be looked at so carefully.
Let
right.
me ask
I
you
agree.
Something. Has anybody heard if Zimmerman is getting Baez, Jose Baez, as his attorney. That's the big rumor.
Anybody? I've not heard anything.
Yeah,
I personally haven't heard it, but
it would make sense.
Well, that would, you know what, that would explain a lot if that's
you know,
why George Zimmerman has been quiet.
I don't know if you guys agree with me, but the attorneys to me seem nervous on some level.
Yes.
If something just didn't seem right to me in this press conference, and a lot more was said than I would have ever. I mean, I have worked with attorneys for years as a paralegal and legal secretary. They're usually pretty quiet on things. I mean, it's.
Do you think
I
maybe they were trying
surprised.
To defend themselves before something
felt
came out?
That's
what I thought.
My feeling. My feeling was that they were protecting themselves from something, and again, I could be way off. But
yeah.
I kind
of maybe they're scared.
That
maybe they've been threatened. Who knows? Maybe they're scared of retaliation.
Well, I kept hearing a helicopter overhead and everything, and I kind of was starting to fear for them, for their own.
Right.
When I was walking
because
them.
In this particular case, you know, I mean, some attorneys, it's really hard to like them when they take on certain people, like, you know, anybody who, you know, goes and defends
sure.
Joran van der Sloot. I'm sorry, it's really hard to like that attorney.
Right.
They're doing their job, you know. Under those
well, and then they're saying that, you know, one of them said something like he thinks that he knows where he is, you know. That might not be the best thing to say today, you know?
Right. Yeah, that's true.
I wouldn't have said that.
No.
The thing is, this is the kind of case where, you know, I believe that a good attorney is needed on, you know, both sides. Attorneys to bring to not do the Jose Baez bullcrap routine, which is just make up a bunch of garbage and throw it at the jury and hope they fall for it, but to really clearly examine the evidence,
nice.
Make sure the other side is not overstepping and twisting the evidence. I mean, that's what court's supposed to be about, not that it is often, but I think that's, again, that to keep it a rational trial if it becomes that, and not have, you know, people standing outside, you know, picketing and all kinds of crap, and you know it's just going to be very difficult, I think, to have people being reasonable about this trial.
Have either of you thought that maybe something's happened to Zimmerman? Because that thought came to my mind too.
I didn't think that, because I think if something would have happened, we would have heard immediately.
Probably.
That we would have heard. I mean, I don't, but you know what, Isabel Zender from Examiner.com, I don't know. Anything is possible. This is so bizarre.
Now, you know about the new Black Panthers that came out, and
they came out with a $10,000 reward.
Bounty on his,
They
were pretty frightening looking group.
Well, I think they should have been arrested for that.
I was watching them.
Yeah.
They were frightening people. I mean, they just, you know, and to make that kind of, I don't know, I didn't know you could just do that.
I didn't think you could either. You know what, if I did that, I think I'd be arrested.
You would
and
think,
that's
but
wrong.
Is this our freedom of speech? I mean, this
well,
that's
there,
not freedom of speech because you're.
I was going to say there's got
to
be
kill another person. That's,
yeah, you can't do that.
And offering money
that's
to do
what
it
I
and helping a hit.
Well, then
hit
how
man.
Come nothing's happened, Pat?
Well, I think it's the way they've worded it. They've offered $10,000 for George Zimmerman. They didn't say George
dead
Zimmerman
or alive.
Dead, but that.
Yes,
oh, they
did
say dead or alive. They did. Well, then they should
it
be
on
arrested.
Their poster. Mm-hmm.
They should be arrested, don't you think, Pat?
They should. I think the problem again is I think there's always a real reluctance to take action when it becomes such a political and racial issue, or mostly a racial issue. That's where people stop wanting to, you know, to do anything. Which is, again, is such a shame because a lot of times you're dealing with more of, I don't want to put this, if it's wrong, it's wrong. And,
right.
and we shouldn't be putting a racial attachment to it. If it's wrong, it's wrong. It's the same kind of, on the reverse side of it, every time I speak up about parents teaching their children responsibilities for their behaviors and for how they dress, because, you know, when kids and adults, when any of us go out, we are going to be judged on our clothing and behavior because that's the way it works. As I said, people profile all the time. So we do have a responsibility as parents. It has nothing to do with race. It has everything to do with teaching your children to respect people around them and to be dressed in a manner that they're going to be well received. If your daughter goes out of the house with hardly any clothes on and somebody calls her a hoe, you know, you shouldn't be going and getting all mad about it because your daughter looks like a hoe. You know,
sure, if somebody grabs her off the right, or she gets raped, and then people
just,
are crying about it, and she's standing there wearing nearly nothing.
Right, and
you know
if your son is walking around town And I'm not saying Trayvon. I'm just saying a person.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. If your son is walking around town looking really creepy with clothes that people associate with thugs, and every child who puts on thug clothing, by the way,
yep,
knows they're imitating a thug. That's
mm-hmm.
what they're doing it for. Every girl who puts on her teeny-weeny little skirt and her top, that, you know, her boobs falling out the top, they'll call themselves hoes. They know what they're representing. Now, they think it's cute and they think it's funny, you know, because, you know, every
mm-hmm.
kid goes through a period where they want to be a little outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
But it is
yeah.
the parent's job to say, you know, outrageous can work under certain circumstances. In certain locations, you can be outrageous. But there's other locations you cannot be outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
And one might be dusk, walking down the street with your pants falling off, you know,
oh.
and an outfit and poking around in a way that looks scary to people. If you, and, you know, you're putting your hand in your pocket looking like you have a weapon. Doesn't matter
right.
if you're white or black. People go, does that guy have a weapon? You know, it's the way people are going to view you. And I always taught that to my children. I said, look, you know, when you go out in the neighborhood, it's your responsibility as a young citizen to not scare the elderly people in our neighborhood, you know, to not scare their children.
Right.
You put a nice smile on your face, and you walk by an adult when you're 15.
Mm-hmm.
Don't give
right.
them that silly look. Give them a nice smile and say, good afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It doesn't take
nice
much for
man.
It doesn't
That's
take much for a teenager to look scary, because they're big. You know, they're at that phase, some of them, where, just like you're saying, they want to fit in or whatever they want to do. And some of them I've seen, even they go to the skate park. And you can sit there and be a little scared. Now, when you start talking to them, they're all nice kids.
They're fine. Yeah,
but
I know.
But if you
you're
look
right.
at them,
you're
I mean,
right.
you could be like, okay, I don't want to be here, but get to talking to them, they're fine. But
right.
It,
and
but
if
again,
the neighborhood doesn't know you, it's one
exactly.
thing to walk down your street where you say, hello, Mrs. Geiger, hello, Mrs. Smith. It's another
mm-hmm.
thing to walk down somebody else's street, and they're looking
exactly.
out the window going, who's that kid out there? I've never
Who
seen
is
him.
That kid? Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't matter white or black. And that,
mm-hmm.
you know, but there is a level of responsibility we parents have to take with how our children dress and behave and where
mm-hmm.
they go and what they do. That's our responsibility. And that, but it's not a racial thing. And so it's
right.
often
yeah.
turned into a racial thing. And I'm like, no, I'm not talking about a racial thing. I'm talking about safety for your children and teaching them to be good citizens. It had nothing to do with that. But, you know, I think we have a tendency to take, you know, these subjects and elevate them into a political racial thing when they shouldn't be.
Exactly.
And that's how we go all crazy about everything, because we can't have a discussion without it going that direction. That's not what the issue is.
Hey, guys, I need to wrap this up here in just a little bit. So, Isabel Zender, I'm
mm-hmm.
going to go to you, and then, Pat, we're going to discuss your book. Isabel, you're welcome to stay on the line to discuss it, to, you know, join in as well. But, Isabel, final thoughts on Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman and on what's coming up?
Oh, I think we just have to wait and be patient. And I feel like something's coming soon. I could be wrong. It's just been a lot of activity for the last couple of days. Which leads me to wonder, you know. I don't know if any of you guys heard about the teacher that was just fired.
Oh, yes. Tell us about that briefly.
Yeah, the Southern Poverty Law Center is up in arms about it. She got fired for putting together a fundraiser with her. It all started. She's a middle school teacher, and her students came up and asked her if she knew about the kid that with the Skittles.
Mm-hmm.
So that started a conversation, and this is a charter school that they wear uniforms, and they often dress down, and they often do fundraisers. So this wasn't completely outside of the realm of something real. So what the kids wanted to do was everybody wear a hoodie one day and donate a dollar, and they wanted this money to go to Trayvon's family. So she brought the idea to the superintendent. Evidently, the superintendent didn't like it. This is from what I'm reading. From Southern Poverty Law Center. She didn't like it, so she went back and said, could the students present this to you? And evidently the superintendent got angry and fired her. So they are now...
That's bizarre.
Yeah, they have a petition. I wrote an article today on it, and there's a petition that people are signing to try to get her job back. And so it's up to 63,000 signatures, and it was 20-something.
Well,
yeah,
I mean, you know, Mm-hmm. By firing her was just, it was just dumb. It just caused more problems.
Oh,
you know?
The students. She's very upset about her students because there was comment about what does this teach the kids, you know?
Well,
what is this teaching
I'm a little
the
concerned
children?
About what she was teaching the kids to begin with because she was telling
them. Well, we don't know, right.
But you know, they're all dressing in hoodies and giving
well,
money
they wanted...
to the Martin family. It's taking a side in a case we do not know yet who the perpetrator is. Although, I said,
but
I don't know where
really
I stand on what
a
I'm
side?
Thinking, but... Mm-hmm. I would have, as a teacher, I would have said, it is inappropriate for us to make any determinations here. We don't know, and we shouldn't be going out there.
Do you think that they were making a determination, or do you think this was just from
the way it sounded?
Well, if
all wearing hoodies and running around and saying, it's when you're wearing doing the hoodie march thing, basically you're saying that Trayvon was shot because he was a black child in a hoodie who was racially profiled by George Zimmerman. That is the statement that makes. Whether it's right or whether it's wrong, that's the statement it makes. I think it's inappropriate for a school to get on that bandwagon. They should be talking about, we have to wait for the evidence to come in. No, we're very sad that a young man has lost his life. We're not sure where everything stands at the moment. It's inappropriate for us to take that type of a stance to make this a racial issue until we know
there's
some
for
big racial thing. Whatever.
See, I didn't get that sense. Mm-hmm. I didn't get the...
What if it's true, what even, in spite of what Zimmerman has done, in spite of it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What if it's true he turned around, was walking back to his car,
oh, sure.
never really approached Trayvon ran up to him and started beating him to death. What if that were true? Could be. I tend not to believe that's what the answer is, but it could be, and I'm not willing to say, until we know all the facts, it isn't. So we're taking a stand on something we do not know, and you don't teach children to do that. You know, that's just
exactly.
Inappropriate.
Well,
I guess
I
didn't.
But
see
I don't know
that
she should have been fired
it.
Either. I think you could have, you know, you can just talk to your students.
I think they should have talked to the. They should have just talked to the teacher and sat him down and said,
yeah,
this is a good good school policy and not made it a big media issue.
Yes,
now it's a big deal again.
Yeah.
Isabel,
well, people always overdo it instead of working things out in
exactly.
a peaceful manner, unless there's something we don't know about what went down. No, went down there.
Isabel, why don't you stay on the line with us while we discuss Pat Brown's latest book? We have Isabel Zender from TheExaminer.com and Pat Brown, criminal profiler. I just want to say one thing about the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman case. Again, I go back to George Zimmerman was the adult. He had the gun, and that has a lot of responsibility to it, and that's what bothers me about this case. Is that the 17-year-old is dead, and George Zimmerman was not a cop, and he had the gun. That's what bothers me. Okay, Pat Brown, you have a new book out, but it's not your normal Pat Brown-type book. Why don't you tell us about it?
Well, I don't know what normal is. I've had two books out, which are nonfiction.
They're not
so
normal,
that's
sure. I don't
know if it makes me abnormal to be a fiction writer for this moment in time. But, yes, I decided to write a fiction story. I have a story that came to mind one night, and I decided I wanted to write it. And as a lot of fiction authors will tell you, once you start writing a story, you want to find out what the end is because you actually don't know when you start it how it's all going to turn out. So I was just as interested in finding out what was going to happen in the story as the people who read it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is actually a story that has a protagonist is an African-American man who his name is Billy Ray Hutchins. He lives up in Tennessee, and he kind of was left behind in time. Lived alone, ended up living alone at a very young age, and just sort of got lost from the system and everything, never got any education, just lived up there by himself with his dog, and a very kind of old-fashioned, you know, kind of reminds you if you read the book of something from John Steinbeck Kill a Mockingbird, that kind of a flavor. And he lives alone, and one day he goes down to the railroad tracks, and there's a girl standing there, and she's got a little suitcase with her, and she just looks at him and says, "Can I go home with you?" And he has no idea what she's talking about. And she says, "Just go home with you." And he said, "Okay." Takes the girl home and falls in love with her and lives with her for 2 years. And then she up and kills the neighbor.
Oh, my gosh.
I've been reading it.
And that kind of ruins a, you know, really nice, happy love story there.
Yeah.
And this is a story there on out. This girl, you know, she's in jail. And he is trying to find out, you know, what he should do about this, because he loves a girl who's obviously a killer, and he doesn't know, you know, what to do about the whole situation. So he goes on an excursion trying to find out about, you know, about the girl, you know, what
whether
she really
she's
is.
A crazy killer or what her story is. Now
yeah,
that
you know,
should
don't
interest.
Tell
should
us too much,
with
Pat,
her, or
I'm
should
still
he,
reading.
Or will he learn enough to free himself from her, you know, from
mm-hmm.
herself as your psychopath, or what's the problem with this woman? And it's a really very sweet story. People who have read it, they said they can't put it down. There's lots of twists in it, and which keeps people wondering what's going to happen next. And it is a very, by the way, I just want to say it's a very positive African American. It's almost, you know, it's kind of funny as a white author of an African, basically it's considered African American literature, because we have the, you know, Billy Ray Hutchins is black, and the police chief is black, and there's a couple other wonderful black characters in the story as well. Charlene, the lady he loves, happens to be white, but this is not a story about race. It has nothing
mm-hmm.
to do with race, and that's kind of, you know, why I wanted to write the story. It just was about people. Race
exactly.
doesn't even end in the story. It's about people and about learning, you know, trying to figure out life and about love and what to do with it. And it is a murder mystery. It's a very psychological murder mystery. And so there's a lot of, you know, not a whodunit, but a why done it, and what's going to happen. What else has she done? And
mm-hmm.
But it's more of a human story. And coming on the heels of all this Trayvon Martin thing, it kind of makes me happy when I read it, because it's just about people and it's not about race.
And it's called
There's different races in it.
Only the Truth by Pat Brown. You can get it on Amazon.com. You can also
yes.
get it to your Kindle, correct?
Oh, I have to, yes. You can download it from Amazon.com. It's $2.99 from Kindle. You can download it to your computer if you don't have a Kindle. And if you really want to get it from someplace else because you have a Nook, you can go to Barnes
&
Noble.
Yeah, you can do the Nook. I'm doing it on
yeah,
the
and
Nook.
Yeah, I want to mention this. There's also, up until midnight tonight, I have a short story up there called Me, Abe, and Greyhound You. And it's a funny story about, it's actually about a trip I took once, you know, a long time ago, 30 years ago, cross country on a bus.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a funny story, it's a humor story, and it's free right now. So you can just go to Amazon, you can download it for free up until midnight. So you got to, you know, they only allow you so much time to give away freebies. It's called Me, Abe, and Greyhound You. And if you forget that, you just put in, you know, you put in Only the Truth, you find my Only the Truth book, and then you can you know, click on my other books, and you can just download that for free. So,
Isabel, have you ever thought about writing a book?
Yes, I have. If I will have enough time in my life, I definitely plan to do that. Things should settle down a bit, hopefully, in the near future for me.
Yes, we all wait for that day.
Mm-hmm.
That day you let me know.
But I literally have not had the time. But I do want to write, and a lot of people have been asking me to write.
Uh-huh.
So it's definitely in the future. It's just not happening in this moment, but it will.
It will. Well, okay, ladies, I've got to wrap it up. I am so sorry that we have to wrap it up, because we could go on all night. Isabel Zender from TheExaminer.com will be looking forward to more of your articles about Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman. Thank you so much. And Pat Brown, your latest book is called Only the Truth. It's a novel getting rave reviews. You can go to Amazon.com or PatBrown.com and pick it up there, or at least get
There's
to
no
the link.
PatBrown.com, so don't go there.
Oh, don't go there. Okay, go to
Amazon.com
and go to
Amazon
only,
or Barnes & Noble. Or if you like Smashwords, you can go to Smashwords. But,
Only the Truth is the name of it. Ladies,
and
thank you.
I'm reading it. I'd like everyone to know I am reading it, and it is good.
And
okay,
so there
well,
we have
you
a,
very much.
I like it. Yes,
we have
like
a mid-book
it.
Review from Isabel Zender. Thank you, ladies. Thank you so much.
I didn't want Pat to tell too much more about it, because I am still reading it.
There
yeah,
you
well,
go.
I can't tell much. I don't want to ruin it for anybody. So it's really hard to describe the book.
I was sitting here like biting my fingernail. Don't tell anymore.
I didn't.
Thanks,
ladies. We'll see you later. Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, Tricia. And bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.
Isabel Zender and Pat Brown, we were discussing the Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman case, and wow, Kimster, I don't even know where to go with this. I go back and forth. I'm like, go in and out, up and around. I am all over the place, and I don't know about you, Kimster. I mean, I'm afraid to ask. I don't want to know. Don't tell me, because we'll get into a conversation about it. So I just want the truth. That's all I want, whatever the truth is. You know,
yeah.
It's like with everything, I just want the truth. I don't want the rhetoric and all the stuff that everybody says. And, oh, my gosh, it makes me crazy. Anyway, now that I've got
Same
myself
here.
All worked up.
Yeah, I'm not from any areas. I've lived in different places on the West Coast, and none of the areas have been had racial issues. So for me, it's kind of hard to grasp. I was talking about it today on Web Sleuth with some of the members. It's hard for me to grasp because we just don't have it like that. I mean, I probably met maybe 5 racists in my life,
mm-hmm.
and one of them was when I was in a bathroom at a train station in Houston in the 70s. So, you know, I mean, to me, it's
just
really
foreign. Whoa, now that sounds very strange.
Yeah, I was talking to a African-American woman out in the lobby area and, you know, just chatting with her. I wasn't thinking a thing about it because, like I say, everyone I've ever known has been colorblind.
Mm-hmm.
And just chatting with her away, and I went into the restroom, and this white lady comes up to me and says, "You can't be talking to people like that," and went off on me for talking to her. I was in shock. I thought, man, I could never live in a place like this.
Oh, yeah, that's bizarre. Oh, brother. Well, hopefully we'll get to the truth sooner rather than later, and hopefully, I mean, let's just hope everybody remains calm. Okay, Kimster, a hot, cold case from Web Sleuth. It's a little different this week. Why don't you tell us about it?
Yes, it is a little bit different. This case came to me from one of our members. It's about little Neely Smith, age 5, and the precious little girl. She was murdered in 1981 in South Carolina, and you know, Tricia, this was so sad. I couldn't even find a picture of her on the internet. I had to go and find a silhouette picture of her. But when I started looking more into the case, come to find out there is a suspect in this case. And this guy, I'll let you describe him because you know I don't like to use bad words. His name is Fred Coffey. And the only reason I say his name, I just got chill saying it. The only reason I'm saying his name is because on July 21st, 2012, this man's coming up for parole.
Nice.
He was convicted of the murder of a 10-year-old girl named Amanda Ray in North Carolina. He has admitted to molesting 300 children.
And that he's up for parole? Oh, he better not get it.
2012. He's a suspect in the murders of Neely Smith, who is our cold case, a 14-year-old named Kathy Beatty in Maryland, an 8-year-old boy named Travis King from Virginia, and possibly connected to the disappearances of 14-year-old Tracy King in Pennsylvania, 11-year-old Sheila, and 13-year-old Catherine Lyons in Maryland, I think they're sisters, 15-year-old Carolyn in, I don't know how to pronounce her last name, Majane maybe, in North or New Jersey. Anyway, there's on websleuths.com, on the front page, www.websleuths.com, up in the right-hand corner area, you'll see the silhouette. Push click here, go to the thread. On that thread, there is an area where you can write to Chairman Charles L. Mann Sr. He is the North Carolina Post-Release Supervision and Parole Commission, and let him know about how you feel about Coffey being released on parole in July 2012.
Now, you say he's scheduled for parole or up for parole discussion. Which one is it?
You know, I'm not real good about this stuff, but I guess a parole review date, sorry.
Okay,
a parole review date.
That doesn't necessarily mean he's getting out, which is a wonderful thing. It just means his parole is going to be reviewed, and if those people who review it have an ounce of sense, they will keep this monster, this scumbag piece of crap behind bars. I can't imagine they let him out, but you know what? Stranger things have happened. Nothing surprises me anymore, really. It just doesn't. So, well, Kim, sir, we'll keep our fingers crossed, and I'd like to keep following that case. In fact, I'm going to work on perhaps getting a guest on the show next week or the week after to talk about this situation, because just the fact that the guy can come up for a discussion for a parole is outrageous in itself, you know?
Yes, I agree. I mean, it is. I have no words. Why I was hoping you had. It didn't sound like you had any either.
Well, I had some good choice ones. You know, just some disgusting, horrible scumbag bastard creep. I can go on and on and on, believe me. But Kimster, thank you so very, very much. Now, we're going to be back Sunday, our regular time. I will be back home then. And Kimster, you'll be joining us as well, correct?
Yes, I will.
Okay. Well, thank you, Kim, sir, for making it tonight on our special date of the different date and time for Web Sleuths Radio. And thank you all for taking the time out to join us tonight. We really do appreciate it. We will be back Sunday, our regular time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, Web Sleuths Radio, where we discuss true crime, current events, and we always do so with common sense. Good night, everybody.